Welcome to Elite Muscle Radio, hosted by myself, Phil Graham. If you're an up-and-coming coach, trainer, or fitness enthusiast, this is the show for you. Providing no-nonsense, evidence-based knowledge and experience from some of the best minds in the fitness industry, self-help, and business world. Use it to strengthen your mindset, build your knowledge on nutrition and training, whilst also give you key insights on how to grow a more successful and profitable fitness business. Check us out on iTunes or SoundCloud, and don't forget to leave a review. All show notes can be found at phil-graham.com. Get a pen and paper ready. Let's go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 75 of Elite Muscle Radio with myself, Phil Graham. It has been over 3 weeks since the last podcast. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you guys. I have plenty of podcasts lined up with some very exciting guests. Today I'm joined by Bedros Kulian and we talk for over an hour, and I can rest assured every other minute is loaded with hidden gems. And guys, I don't want you to just listen through to this podcast and forget about it. I want you to note stuff down, whether that's on a pen and paper, whether that's on your mobile, or whether it's just mentally. Try and capture and snapshot a lot of the elements that we're talking about and bring them back into your own business, your own life. There are so many lessons here to learn. I'm very fortunate to get to connect with so many influential leaders in their various fields and pick their brains on various different aspects of business and life. And I'm a firm believer in results. If somebody's achieving results, there is a process, there is a mindset, and there is a strategy behind that success. And whether that's down to actual tactics or overcoming challenges or the ability to flip perceptions and thoughts, there are definitely elements of that success that we can borrow and implement into our own lives and apply to our own personal contexts. So that's the main purpose of interviewing all these influential guys, is to really give you guys an insight into how leaders actually think and how we're actually quite similar in many different ways. And I want you to be able to benefit from that. So before we go in and interview Bedros, I want to just touch on the topic of assumption. And I mentioned this earlier on tonight on social media, and I had a decent handful of messages within about 10 to 15 minutes of posting it. And whenever it comes to assumptions, guys, it's very important to realize that there are two different types of assumptions. There's first of all your own assumptions, and your own assumptions are the path of least resistance. Assumptions are absolutely essential towards success. You have to set assumptions on a goal or how you want to be, and that's your line, that's your target, that's your path to walk along. Now, the flip side is setting an assumption of how somebody else should behave. And there's massive problems with this. Whenever you set assumptions of how somebody else may behave, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a business partner, it's very unpredictable, and you are setting yourself up for a massive fall. So it's extremely important that you learn the difference between the two different types of assumptions: your own personal assumptions, which should be indefinite and crystal clear, and your GPS to where you want to go, and also as well your assumptions towards other people. That you never place immediate faith in them, because people only act according to their highest values. People will only act according to what is best for them, and you have to understand that. So you can never place immediate hope or reliance on somebody to fulfill their life in accordance to how you think they should do it. So that's very, very important. And I think as coaches, we need to respect that, especially in respect to business and respect to working with clients. And also as well in respect to business relationships, and also relationships outside, which also affect our business. So that's very important to consider. On top of that, I also made a small, subtle little announcement on social media earlier on this week about launching a life project for men. And it's something that I'm studying quite extensively at the moment on top of everything else that I'm doing. As many of you know, I'm launching the Diabetic Muscle and Fitness Training Lab on the 10th of November. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And the sheer wealth of support that we've had for the whole Diabetic Muscle and Fitness community has been overwhelming. I opened up the Facebook group just the other week, probably around about 2 weeks ago. and the engagement is close to around 25.6 thousand comments within the last couple of weeks. So you can guess just how busy and time consuming it's been in there, but it's been amazing reading some of the stories. And if any of you guys in there are familiar with some of the stories, you will know too well how much energy and passion and love is shared in that group, and also the quality of information as well. And you know, the fact that GPs, healthcare professionals, researchers are all starting to reach out now because they've seen this community that I've created and the sheer keen and eager and enthusiastic attitudes of everyone in the group to improve the quality of our health has been really something else and something to experience on a global level. So I'm very excited to launch the training lab and open it up to people all around the world. I also wanted to touch on something that I mentioned on social media earlier on this week, and some of you may have seen it, some of you may have not. I did a live video about it as well, because I did get a lot of messages following up from it. I have been studying and working on a personal development project for young men under the age of 35. So I'm currently studying at the moment and putting together a lot of literature, a lot of content, a lot of different bits and pieces to help young men improve the quality of their lives, not just in fitness, but a little bit further beyond that, with mindset, personal development, and the ability to build various different elements of a man's life, from self-belief, confidence, relationships, the whole way through to creating a business, entrepreneurship, social aspects, various different elements. And I want all the guys that I work with to learn from my mistakes, my lessons, and there have been plenty of those that have been made, and my reflections and perceptions on my own life that I want to be able to give back to younger guys to help them create lives of meaning, of clarity, of purpose, and also as well to allow them to build a highly efficient life that provides for them and fulfills them in every way, shape, or form. So they enjoy their career and they also are able to make an income out of it as well, by leveraging their arts and their creativity and their passion and serving the world in a greater way. So very excited to put that together. It is quite challenging putting it all together. It's quite new to me. It is something, personal development is something that I have been reading and studying for the past 5 to 7 years. And all of you guys that are listening to the podcast will be well aware that your success in business, your success in life is directly proportionate, to the level of personal development that you have. And like I said, it's all about results. Look at your results right now. Are you happy with them in all aspects of your life? Your social, your spiritual, your financial, your vocational, your physical. If you're not happy with any of those elements, then you need to do something different. You need to change what you're doing, change your approach, change your tactics, and that's going to prove highly effective in making a move and taking action towards better. So I'm very excited to put that together. It's very much in the early phases, but I just thought I would let you guys know first, and I can't wait to share it with you. So without further ado, let's get stuck in and hear what Big Bad Bedros has to say. Ladies and gentlemen, I am here with Bedros Koulian. Bedros, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. I have heard some very extreme and strange stories about you from many of my friends, from eating food out of the back of garbage trucks right through to becoming this iconic figure in the world of fitness business. So Bedros, tell us who you are.
Excellent. Well, so we'll start out like this. I usually tell people when they ask me, well, what's your story? I tell them I'm the immigrant edge and I'm the American dream. And they go, well, what do you mean the immigrant edge, the American dream? I said, well, we escaped communist Russia in 1980. I was 6 years old. So imagine this, you not knowing anything. And one day, Phil, your mom and dad say, hey, let's go. We're going on a bus ride. The bus ride leads to a train ride, which leads to a flight to Italy. From Italy, we escape and come to the United States. And within 8 days of that bus ride that randomly showed up in my life, we're in this brand new country. And what a weird experience. It was 1980, July 16th, that we came to the United States. I was 6 years old. My brother was 19. My sister was 21. And we were broke. We were poor. We didn't speak English. And all my dad knew was he's anti-communist. He believes in the Western way of freedom and opportunity and democracy. And he had previously, the previous 2 years, he had put together 25,000 rubles to bribe the Soviet government to let us escape into Italy and then from Italy into the United States. So I always think a movie can be made of my dad's life, you know.
Definitely, but 100%.
Yeah, what my dad did not plan for was the next thing that's going to happen, which is the $200 that he had in his pocket, or $180 right around there. What little money he had, we had to use for housing for the first month in the country here in the United States. And so thankfully, he knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who would let us borrow a spare bedroom in their apartment. And basically, the $200 went towards the spare bedroom. So the five of us stayed in some guy's spare bedroom in his apartment. The rest of the time, it was all about find food and start making money for month number two in the United States. Otherwise, we're going to be immigrant and homeless, right? So this is where the fun began. My dad was pumping gas at a gas station, delivering newspapers in the middle of the night, washing dishes at a pizzeria. My brother and sister had multiple jobs, very similar. My mom had one job, and then the other job was to watch me because I was the baby of the family, 6 years old. And my dad accidentally discovered that grocery stores have giant dumpsters behind them, and they throw away food that's gone bad, or maybe it's has mold on it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's expired, but they can't sell it, so they have to throw it away. So one day he takes me, we walk, because my dad used to ride a bike everywhere because he wouldn't have a car the first year. And he takes me around 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, right after the sun sets, and to a back of a grocery store. And he goes, "Hey, I'm going to put you in that dumpster and you pull out anything that you think we can eat." And so to me, it was a treasure hunt. I'm in this dumpster. I'm pulling out bread. He says, "Yeah, that's fine. Throw it to me. Milk. Yeah, it's expired. But if it doesn't, it's not sour yet, we can drink it. Fruit." Right. So for the first, I don't know, probably 6, 7, 8 months, we were eating out of dumpsters so that what money my parents were making could be used for shelter and electricity and gas bills. Now, we were still shopping at, obviously, stores, but we did most of our shopping in the dumpsters. And then what we needed outside of that, we ended up getting from the grocery stores. But it was a fascinating life. And now imagine not knowing the language in a country where you really need to know the language and the culture. So at the time, the United States, while it's an amazing place, was not as forgiving as it is today. And I remember so many people yelling at my mom and dad and telling us to go back to your own country. You don't belong here. You don't even speak our language. And growing up as a kid, it kind of leaves a scar on you because you start to think that, man, this country really is not what my dad painted it out to be. When in reality, I'm so glad that happened now because it forced us to assimilate faster, forced us to learn the language better, and forced us to become one of the citizens in this country. I don't want anybody else to ever go through that. And I think the culture in this country is different in 2017 than it was in 1980. You know, I like to think that I wouldn't yell at someone who's brand new in this country, doesn't speak English, but those were the trials and tribulations we went through. And we've been kicked out of so many apartments, and I went to 3 elementary schools, 2 junior high schools, 2 high schools after that. So we moved around so much that I learned how to make friends quickly. We moved around so much that I learned how to build rapport fast, because you and I, Phil, might be friends for 6 or 8 months, and then we're moving on to a new school because I got kicked out of the apartments. And all of those things, the ability to build rapport, to adapt, to find resources and be resourceful when you don't have the resources, are all tactics that I use today in growing my business and coaching my clients. So I'm forever grateful for the hardships that we dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, what was your first memory of success as a young kid growing up as a young guy? When was your first penny drop moment that you said to yourself, well, this is going to get the ball rolling for me?
Wow, I can actually, I can tell you very specifically, my first memory of success was 1995. And a friend of mine sold me a used Toshiba laptop. And it was either 1996 or 1997, America Online came to be. And America Online would send you these discs, and they would give you 10,000 hours of free internet. And so I would pop the disc into my laptop and get on the internet. And I said, man, all of a sudden I'm connected to more people who just live in Anaheim, where I lived at the time. And I started to get my wheels spinning. If I'm connected to these people, what could I do to sell them something? And I don't know why that even crossed my mind. I started connecting with them in chat. Remember chat groups and discussion groups?
Yeah, MSN and all those kinds of MySpace and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started connecting with people, and you know, I'm into fitness, and so I started talking to them about workouts and nutrition and how to do a back squat better, whatever. And I said, man, I'm building relationships here. I wonder if I could sell them something. Well, I had a friend who could get supplements, muscle building supplements for wholesale. And so by the end of 1997, I had built a website called TotalMuscle.com. And within
you'll not get that domain nowadays for a cheap price.
Right? Yeah. And so I built a website. I started selling supplements out of my spare bedroom in my apartment. And even though I ended up losing money in that business, I saw the potential where people who are not even connected to me, I don't need a storefront, could actually come to a website and buy something. Like, I was selling supplements, maybe like a protein powder every other week, a bottle of creatine every other month. So, I mean, I was losing more money because these supplements would expire, then I'd have to throw them away. But the idea of someone in a foreign state buying something from me, and then I would ship out to them and they'd give me money, blew me away. So I saw that here's an opportunity to really make an impact using this new platform called the internet. And I just went all in on it.
Awesome. So do you think that the feelings of adversity or scarcity were really beneficial in driving you forward? Obviously, you've highlighted that. But, you know, nowadays, when we look at mainstream fitness and coaches, and a lot of coaches are wanting to become entrepreneurs, so almost on the online field and offline. Do you think that that ingredient is absolutely essential, that they have to come from a place of complete scarcity or adversity or extreme, change, so to speak, to be really successful, to drive their success?
No, I don't think they have to come from there. I do believe that if you come from extreme adversity, extreme struggle, you know, massive setbacks, and I'm talking like my, you know who Alan Cosgrove is?
Yeah, I know Alan, yeah.
Okay, Alan Cosgrove, he's had stage 4 cancer, and there is no stage 5. Stage 5 is you're dead, right? There is no stage 5. He's had stage 4 cancer. And Alan taught me something really important. He said, man, after having stage 4 cancer, I only have good days and great days. I don't have bad days. They're just good days and great days. And so someone with that perspective, if you've had your life on the line, or you've had to eat out of dumpsters, or you've been called a foreigner, or you've gone to sleep hungry, or in my case, which all of those happened, minus the cancer, I had lice as a child. Parents couldn't afford lice treatment, and so my mom had to have my dad siphon out gasoline from a car to wash my hair with gasoline to kill the lice, because when you have that level of adversity, whatever entrepreneurial challenge is set in front of you is trivial compared to the lifestyle that you had and the challenges you've gone through. So do I feel I have an advantage and others like me have an advantage? Yes. Would I wish that advantage on anyone? Absolutely not, because you can also put yourself in a state where you can imagine having cancer, imagine eating out of dumpsters, and say, you know what? Fuck that. I don't ever want that in my life. I'm going to work my ass off and serve people and solve problems and make money.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, we have obviously individuals that have maybe been, you know, fed the spoon in their mouth and they haven't reached in and they get complacent. And we see plenty of fitness professionals, I mean, in all industries, where they've got plenty of resources, plenty of education, but they're not leaning in enough. And, you know, like I said, I think you've made a great point there. It's not that everyone wishes that to happen, but I think sometimes it can be a great catalyst to get things going in that respect. So, I mean, moving on from that, you've talked a lot about anxiety and taking anxiety attacks and stuff over the years. And I think that's fairly common in a lot of individuals who are entrepreneurial, especially within the fitness space and trying to grow things. Yeah. I mean, where does that come from? I mean, when you were anxious, was it scaling your business? Was it fear of success? I mean, what kind of emotions generally were driving that?
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of emotions that will trigger anxiety, but anxiety is actually one specific thing. And you can define it this way. Anxiety is anticipation of future pain. So it could be the pain of loss. I don't want to lose my business. I don't want to lose the money I've invested. What if I lose the money? You start thinking about the what ifs. and you start anticipating what it'll feel like, and you start having anxiety about that. It could be, so it could be even fear of gaining. You know, maybe mom and dad or the school system, someone told you that you're never going to make it. You're only meant, you're dumb. You're a dumb kid. You're not meant to be smart. You'll never be a doctor. So people who go through medical school or any kind of high level thing when they were told they were dumb, find ways to self-sabotage. And so the fear of success could be the trigger where they anticipate future pain and then sabotage themselves. And so anxiety really is just a byproduct of what if X happens. 99.9% of the time, whatever scary thing you think is going to happen is not going to happen. And as scary as it seems, most of the time, it's never as scary as you picture it, right? It's just not. Because the human mind, we're so good at building this overwhelming story up in our head that we say it's a do or die situation. Listen, I'm launching an international franchise right now. We've got almost 600 locations worldwide. We're adding 30 locations a month, every month. And quite honestly, God forbid if my franchise fails a year or 2 years from now, I have the skills to restart. And I don't care what people on social media say. 5 years ago, the fear, my anxiety attack started 5 years ago because what if this franchise fails and people laugh at me?
Do you think there's a threshold that you nearly need to become immune to, and then you're basically over that mark, and then from there on, it's basically your own mission, and that's it?
That's it, man. Now all I think about is like, I can't wait to fail forward, because any kind of failure to me is a opportunity to fail forward, learn from it, and move on. With my first business, TotalMuscle.com, the anxiety I was having is, what if this thing takes off and I can't buy enough supplements in time and I can't deliver it? Oh my gosh. And I would have anxiety. And then I would think, turns out the opposite happened. I wasn't selling enough of it fast enough and it was expiring. So it's never what we think. The problem always comes in a different form. And so for me, it's become this thing where I don't care what people think anymore. I'm fresh out of fucks for anybody and everything, because I am highly focused on my one outcome. And my one outcome is to help 100 million people a day through health, fitness, and well-being. And that means through my thousands of coaching clients and through our thousands of Fit Body Bootcamp locations that we're going to have. So I can't worry about the guys or gals who are going to talk smack about me if Fit Body Bootcamp fails, or if a coaching client, you know, speaks badly of me. That's going to happen. Not every coaching client is a success, but I've still got a path and I'm only focused on dominating that path.
Clearly, you know, you're very clearly defined there in your mission statement, very clearly defined in your words and your sentences there. How long did it take you to roughly tune that in? I mean, obviously that was vague at the start, but has that come in the most recent years where you've seen the most recent growth in your business and
yes,
that, you know, has evolved in that sense?
In 2014, I realized, because 2014, I was having literally an anxiety attack, a major anxiety attack once a week. And if it wasn't an anxiety attack, it was an essential tremor where my body would freeze up and I would just start shaking and my wife would, what's going on with you? And I couldn't talk and I would shake and my teeth would chatter for 2 to 3 minutes at a time. And I had to go get neurologically tested. And we realized that it was just the stress and anxiety manifesting in a different way. Instead of a panic attack, it was essential tremors. And so in 2014, I told myself, it's time to man up. It's time to man up and say, what do I want to do with this business, Fit Body Bootcamp? Up until that point, it was just I treated it as a hobby. And it's embarrassing to say this, man, but if I'm going to be fully transparent, I treated Fit Body Bootcamp and my coaching business as a lifestyle hobby. If I made enough money to travel and have a little bit of freedom and buy the sports car that I want, I'm good. And I knew there was something missing, but I kept burying my head into it. What was missing is I knew I had greater potential and I had a bigger purpose on this planet to touch more lives, but I was being lazy, unstructured, and poorly disciplined. And that was giving me anxiety attacks and essential tremors. In the end of 2014, I said, it's time to man up. And I said, I need 2,500 Fit Body Bootcamp locations. I want to have thousands of coaching clients. I want to help 100 million people worldwide. That's my personal goal. And it's no different than Gary Vaynerchuk saying, I want to buy the New York Jets. Like, that's a definitive goal. And he will work as hard as he can to have the money to buy it. Whether he buys it or not doesn't matter. This is what trips me out, is when people leave comments on his Facebook wall or wherever and go, hey, so when are you going to buy the Jets? His goal is to have enough money to buy it. Whether he buys them or not doesn't matter. Once I get to 100 million people's lives impacted per day through my coaching clients and Fit Body Bootcamp locations, I'll decide if that's enough or not. But right now, it's a very big carrot in front of me and I have something to focus on. In 2014, I didn't have that. And so if you came to me in 2014 and said, Bedros, let's start a, underwater basket weaving franchise. Great, let's do that. And some other guy came to me and said, let's start an info product selling this. Great, let's do that. I was a promotion guy. Now I'm highly focused on my coaching clients and on my franchise and nothing else.
So, I mean, with all the fitness professionals that you've worked with over the years, I mean, what are some of the common threads of anxiety? I mean, you know, some common situations, whether it's going into a gym franchise, setting up a gym, leaving one-to-one personal training, going online. I mean, can you maybe highlight for some of the listeners who are predominantly coaches, what would be some of the common scenarios so that they feel that they're not alone?
As far as things that lead to anxiety?
Yeah, anxiety in terms of growth and, again, things that will possibly lead to distractions and then lack of clarity, and then that all stumbles back into anxiety and failure to grow. So a couple of, you know, big case circumstances that you come across quite commonly.
Yeah. So here's the biggest one, and it doesn't matter if it's online or offline, is jumping into the next thing too early. In other words, think about a personal trainer who's got a gym or a boot camp or a CrossFit box. It's 60, 70% full. It certainly can use another, you know, 30, 40% more clients. There's plenty of room to raise their prices. They still have room to bring supplements and sell supplements. But the ego says, I like the idea of being a multi-gym location owner. And so they go and sign another lease with another landlord. Now they're building it out and they realize all of a sudden that the reason location one was successful was because of them, not the systems. They had no systems. Now that they're in location number two, the bottom is falling out of location one, and that causes massive anxiety, stress, chaos in their lives, overwhelm, right? Where on the online space, personal trainers who are online get lots of opportunities. And so I call it being overwhelmed with opportunities. So you're doing online coaching and you're doing just nutrition coaching. In fact, one of my clients, Jason Phillips, I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this number. He does over $100,000 a month in recurring revenue with his online nutrition coaching business. Now, he's highly focused. If he decided that, you know what, I'm also going to do this, I'm also going to do online workouts, and I'm also going to sell them supplements, he hasn't even come close to tapping in his nutrition. You know, he can probably do about, 8 to 10 million a year right now with his online nutrition coaching, because he's got 12 coaches under him and he keeps certifying more. So until he reaches his fullest potential there to shift gears and also do workout coaching and also sell supplements will be the kiss of death. But we've got him highly focused in. And so it's really being either overwhelmed with opportunities, because opportunities do come to him, or if you're offline, it's jumping into the new venture too early. And that could mean many ways. It could mean if you have one gym, you haven't maximized the number of clients you have, and you decide, okay, I'm doing boot camp. My boot camps aren't full, and I'm going to launch a one-on-one personal training business as well inside my existing business.
Yeah, so there's a lot of distractions going on,
Distractions and lack of structure are the number one cause of anxiety, because you quickly realize the what ifs. What if this fails? What if I get laughed at? What if I don't make money? And you start anticipating future pain, and that leads to either the tremors or to a panic attack.
And that leads me on to my next point. We've obviously talked a little bit earlier on there about the difference between being entrepreneurial and a coach. And I think there's a massive confusion nowadays, especially with social media, between trying to be an entrepreneur, famous, and a coach at the same time. But the whole aspect of coaching is being lost. Are you seeing that over in the States? Because definitely in the UK, there's definitely an aspect where the coaching aspect, the care for the client, is being lost. And, you know, you've touched on a couple of points there that have raised my eyebrows and attention, where you started at the start, where you were talking on MSN and creating chats about relationships, and then evolving that on to talk about more relationships later on down the line. And that's almost been lost with quick buy this, now buy type approach. And I mean, I can see that much more. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you nailed it. Here's what's happening right now, man. Everybody, all of a sudden, everybody thinks that being an entrepreneur means you're a superstar. All of a sudden, you have fame if you're an entrepreneur. I don't know how that happened. I think being an entrepreneur sometimes can be a curse, because my wife and kids suffer from me being an entrepreneur. I don't have the perfect work-life balance. At best, I've got a work-life mix, but I don't have a work-life balance. I just don't, period. And so, you know, but everybody thinks that, you know, when I'm an entrepreneur, I'm in charge of my time. In fact, being an entrepreneur means I'm here to serve you. I'm here to serve my staff. I've got a, you know, two guys right here to my left who are filming me right now. I'm here to serve them. I'm here to serve you. I'm here to serve my 40 some odd staff members in this building. I'm here to serve my thousands of customers and clients. That's a lot of pressure. And so when you take on coaching, most people these days who are selling coaching, they're really selling a program. Here's a blueprint that worked for me. Buy this from me, pay me monthly or whatever it is, and it'll work for you. That's not coaching, bro. That's selling information product on a recurring basis. That's smart that you could swindle people out of money like that, but here's good coaching. When that person takes that blueprint and goes, all right, Phil, I launched it and I was successful. I've got 200 clients now. I need to get a couple of employees under me. And what's the best way to get a couple of co-coaches under me? You're like, I don't know. I've never done that. See, most of the coaches these days haven't been there, but are professing that they've been there and they can do that. Or what happens when you have like Jason Phillips, who's doing $100,000 a month in recurring revenue. He's got 12 coaches. What happens when one or two of his coaches decide to break off and take some of those clients? How does he handle that? How does he stop the hemorrhaging in his business? Because he's got a lifestyle that he's built around that revenue. A good coach is just like a good coach at the Olympic field. When Usain Bolt is running and he's about to cross the finish line and he tears a hamstring, you know, the coach goes, shit, I didn't plan for that. I just trained him to run and cross the finish line. That's all I trained him for. Well, listen, a great coach runs and gets under his arm, hugs him, cries with him, says 4 years from now, we're going to come back and we're going to dominate this sport. That's what a great coach does. They walk them through the problems and the challenges, the growing pains, the divorces, the partnerships that split up, the drug addictions, the alcohol addictions. Make no mistake about it. You point to an entrepreneur, and 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs have some level of addiction. Porn addiction, food addiction, alcohol addiction, gambling addiction, because we are type A, and we can't just be type A and work and be balanced elsewhere. And that's the things that people don't talk about. So you want to be a coach. You want to help someone scale and grow, whether it's in business or in fitness. What happens? How about a fitness coach who helps someone lose weight, but then that person's, the pendulum swings so far this way that now they're anorexic? What do we do now? Has that coach ever dealt with that? Do they know how to work with people who are anorexic? That's no longer a body issue. That's a psychosomatic issue. And so, yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, so much of coaching these days is, well, here's what's worked for me. But when something out of the ordinary happens, when their athlete tears the hamstring, they don't know what to do. Run out, hold your athlete, hug him, bring him in, tell him it's going to be okay, show them it's going to be okay, stay awake with them at night and cry with them. That's what a good coach does. And I've been blessed to have the desire to serve. And because of that, I've got coaching clients who have been with me literally for over a decade now.
I think it turns into the point where, you know, with social media and technology and apps and widgets, that it's that much easier to attract a wealth of clients that you can't actually handle. And then in turn, it becomes a comparison match about who's earning the most, who's got the best photograph on Instagram, etc.
Right.
I mean, I certainly see that. And again, the customer service is neglected in the point whereby they can't be served optimally. So, I mean, moving on from that, in relation to franchises, I mean, is that what's your take on franchises for an up-and-coming coach that has maybe set up a gym, or is maybe considering setting up a gym and is considering going into the gym industry, but feels that the franchise route is the safest route to go? Is there pros? Is there cons? And that was one of the questions that I was asked to ask you. So what's your thoughts on that?
Now, do you mean a coach who's got a great gym and they want to now make it a franchise so that they can sell more of it? Or do they start
in both? In both cases. So we'll start with the first one, just the general personal trainer who's maxed out online coaching and feels that they've got the potential to create a brick and mortar business, and they aren't quite sure where to start. They see all the administration as a complete stress, the staff, etc. They don't have any systems. They're not really too skilled in business, but they're very good at customer service. Where do they go from there?
Yeah. If someone is not good at the business and the systems and the operations piece because they're good as a one-person team by doing the online coaching, in the brick and mortar world, you're going to have clients who are going to show up. You're going to have payments that are delinquent. You're going to have coaches who are going to be running your workouts for you. You're going to have front desk staff who are going to be meeting, greeting, and handling your clients. And so if you don't know how to create systems, processes, and operations, I highly recommend to research a strong franchise that already has these built-in systems and just plug yourself into them. If, on the other hand, your workouts are so unique and different, then great, create your own. But the big warning shot right now is make sure you create the systems first. Systems save you time, effort, and money. That's all a system does. I look at it as an acronym, system, save yourself time, effort, and money. And when someone does, if you have systems, you run the system runs your business. If you don't have systems, you're running it by the seat of your pants. It's a chaotic environment. You're leaving a lot of money on the table. Your staff has this adversarial relationship with you. Your clients feel like the service could be better, but it's not. And they're always looking at the next fitness offering that's available to them in your town. You don't want that environment. So quite honestly, if you don't have the ability to manage people and create systems, go plug yourself into a franchise. Otherwise, go do your own thing, but just know that your systems are the foundation. Lay a strong foundation and then build your empire on top of that.
Yeah, and then we have the flip side. Obviously, somebody who's established a good quality, popular local gym, and they're wanting to build upon that. Where do they go from there? They're thinking about setting another one up on the other side of the country or 30, 40, 50 miles away. But again, like we mentioned earlier, you said, you know, the gym is really good because of them. And again, systems and all that kind of stuff still falls into play there. So any other key elements that somebody would maybe want to consider before they make that jump?
Yeah, absolutely. So before anyone makes a jump to actually being a franchisor, which is what I am, right? Thing number one is you've got one location that's rocking and rolling. Let's just make sure that it's not because of you. If it's personality dependent, you can't replicate that. So the easiest thing to do is create a proof of concept. And so what we did, we started Fit Body Bootcamp. We said, all right, one location is working. Now we are going to open up five locations. So we had five locations throughout Orange County area, this area, and we ran them for a year. They were profitable. They were successful. Our clients were getting results. We were being talked about. We decided, all right, we've got a proof of concept where it's not personality dependent. It's systems reliant. Now we can go out and sell franchises. And the key, and again, being fully transparent, we sold franchises too quickly. We brought on many of the wrong people because we were, we were intoxicated by the money. And so we brought on people who were a bad culture fit. And at the end of the day, you have to realize that everybody is flying your one brand, right? Everybody is flying the Fit Body Bootcamp flag. So if some guy in Texas or Louisiana or New York does something shady to ruin the reputation of the Fit Body Bootcamp brand, it affects hundreds of locations worldwide. So we quickly learned that lesson in 2011 and started rebuilding our empire, parting ways with a lot of franchisees who were just a bad fit. And now we have a vetting out process where we only take 2% of the people who apply to become a Fit Body Bootcamp owner. And it's worked out well for us. So one, it's create a proof of concept, multiple locations, run it for a year. Is it still successful, profitable? Did you work out all the kinks? Yes. Now bring in 10 or 15 franchisees at a time, work with them, make them successful, and then scale. You'll get to a point once you're north of 150, 200 locations where you can just open, you know, keep the onboarding process going. But again, being fully transparent, I got a 40-person team running our machine here. You know, someone who's just starting a gym or fitness franchise and they go, hey, I've got one successful location, so I'm going to make this a franchise and go global. Odds are you're not going to do it with you and your best friend. It's not going
to
work.
And did you ever find delegating work out to staff a difficult task, especially from coming from Russia over here and trust? I mean, what was your thought process in overcoming that?
Oh my gosh, dude, that was my biggest limiter. I always think back that if I can go back and being able to delegate better and trust sooner, I would have been more successful probably 5 to 7 years sooner.
And yeah, you find that was just ingrained from the circumstances, obviously, that you grew up in?
Yeah. I mean, especially what I saw from my dad was you can't trust people. My dad would, till this day, this is a funny story. My dad has a glass coffee container and, well, you guys, no one knows where he lives anyway. They live in Anaheim, but he's got $32,000 buried in the backyard in a glass coffee container that me and my brother know. My dad is 84 years old. I go, Dad, let's put that in the bank. Let's put that somewhere where we can earn even a little bit of interest. Nope, you can't trust the bank system, right? He's got the old communist mentality because you couldn't trust him.
Yeah.
And so imagine growing up in that environment while my dad loved democracy and freedom and opportunity, he also did not have a lot of trust, understandably. And so that did bleed into me. And when I became an entrepreneur, I couldn't trust. I didn't want to delegate. I'll do it all myself. And when you try and do it all yourself, you become the bottleneck. And I was the bottleneck in my own business for many years.
So you've shared some really interesting insights there on entrepreneurship, gym development, franchises. What have you got in the pipeline? I'm aware you've got a book coming out, and there's all those key elements are going to be talked about in the book and many, many more. So
yes,
give us an insight into that. I'm very excited to hear about it.
Sure, sure. So like I said, in 2014, after having so many anxiety attacks and essential tremors, I said those five words to myself: it's time to man up. And you know, someone once asked me, so then what happened? I said, well, I became an effective leader. And they said, well, what does that mean, being an effective leader? I said, I became more decisive. I started to communicate better. And I had higher standards for myself. Oh, okay, great. That's fantastic. Then what happened? I said, well, then I got clarity of vision. I knew exactly how many Fit Body Bootcamp locations I wanted. I knew exactly how many owners I wanted to have on board. And I knew the path that we were going to take to get there. Okay, then what happened? Well, then I stopped settling for employees who are going to clock in a little late, clock out a little early, just do the bare minimum to maintain their work, and instead decided to hire a high-performance team, a team that is driven by my vision and focused on getting my vision to cross the finish line, right? Today, I have a team. No one refers to each other as employees in here. So they either call ourselves we're the staff or a team. I happen to be the team captain, but that's the only difference. I'm in here playing the same game that they are. And so the book Man Up really is about becoming an effective leader, getting clarity on your vision, and building a high performance team who can help cross your vision, you know, to the finish line. And many entrepreneurs, whether small time business, just a one location gym or an online coach, so many people have great potential with that one location or a franchise potential or a supplement company. The potential that we have is huge. 99.9% of us never hit our potential or even come close because we don't embrace leadership. We have very poor clarity of vision. And of course, our team is anything but a team. And so I really talk about the trials and tribulations and the exercises and process to go through to become an effective leader, get clarity of vision, and build a high performance team and man up into the entrepreneur that you're supposed to become. Unfortunately, Phil, it's not a light switch. It's a dimmer switch. It's a slow process. I started in late 2014. I believe I hit my stride early 2016. So I'm being very honest here. Like, I became a very task-driven leader late 2015, early 2016. And it is a process.
And what do you think it was between the 2014 to 2015-16 that was holding you back the most? We've obviously touched on trust there, but you were just maybe a bit of lack of faith, what anything just that we could relate to as humans. Think of.
Man, I'll tell you right now. So once I discovered it was those three things, because I said, all right, I need to man up. And so the first time I said, I need to man up, I fired someone who was toxic in my business. And then I said, all right, I need to man up. And then I parted ways with a business partner that I was not getting along with. And we had two separate visions for our company. And then I said, I need to man up. And I hired someone who was actually driven as much as I was. I hired people, believe it or not, who were not as driven because I felt like I didn't deserve them. Again, goes back to how I felt about myself. And so, but ultimately I figured out it's leadership, it's vision, and it's team. But here's what I did. I went backwards. I said, well, I'm going to build a great team. I'm going to be clear on my vision and they're going to execute for me. They didn't. That's what took me so long. Until you become the leader that you're meant to be, you have high standards. For them, you have to have higher standards for yourself. If I want them to be disciplined and structured, I have to wake up before them. I have to have better discipline, better structure, better time management. I have to not emotionally react. I have to respond. I have to be more decisive than they are. I have to use speed of implementation faster than they do. And so I was not the leader who was leading from the front. I was leading from behind. Hey, go out and do this. This is my vision. Go execute. Now it's, hey, this is what we're doing. Come with me. Come with me. I'm up front. So when you are leading from the front and you become the servant leader, your empire just explodes.
Awesome. That was awesome, man. Bedros, thank you very, very much for coming on. Thank you for sharing all those quality gems of wisdom. Where can the listeners get in touch with you?
Yes, the best place to get in touch with me is manup.com, where they can get on our notification list for our book and also get a lot of fun and engaging emails about those lessons that I talked about here.
Awesome stuff. Bedros, thank you very, very much